Okay, this is February 14th, 1989. We're interviewing Mrs. Sandra Jefferson. well, basically all I need to know is, you know, when and where you were born and the name of your parents and when and where they were born.
I was born in Norfolk, Virginia. February 18th, 1948. My parents are John and Rosa Martin. My mother was born in Norfolk, Virginia, August 7th, 1927. My father was born in Holly Springs, Mississippi, October 25th, 1925.
Okay. And your grandparents?
My grandparents on my mother's side, John and Velma Banton. My grandmother was born in Princess Anne County, Virginia, November 5th, 1905. My grandfather was born in what they call Pungo, Virginia, in April of 1905. I don't know the exact date. Okay. My father's parents were born in Mississippi. Now I don't know where my grandfather was born. He died when my father was 7. But my grandmother was born in Holly Springs, Mississippi, in on February 4th, 1900.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and how did you end up in Kingsville? Why did your family come to Kingsville?
My father was in the Navy, and he was stationed at the Naval Air Station in 1960.
Okay, and all right, that's kind of, he was stationed in the Navy. Okay, I'm gonna skip that because you say you didn't know anything about Kingsville.
I know a little bit. You can ask me a few questions. Okay. Try it anyway.
Could you give me, do you know what the role of the railroad was in the development of black community?
Okay, now I can tell you this much from my mother-in-law and father-in-law's, the way they talked and what I knew of the railroad when I first came here. It seemed like the center of everybody, of black community, the railroad, that was the main job. Okay, when we came here, the railroad was still very, in 1960, the railroad was still very active. You still had a passenger train, and we lived on Wesatch, so we used to see the brakeman going to work, and mostly every black male, especially if they wanted to live a halfway decent life, they worked the railroad.
Was it hard to get a job there?
Now, that I really wouldn't know, but at the time, I don't think so, as long as you knew someone and you were healthy.
Okay, so the pay was good.
The pay was good, yeah. Considering, I guess, because most of the people that worked for the railroad, they lived a pretty decent life. They had nice homes.
Okay. Yeah. How did it affect the family? You know, they having to be away a lot and everything, working on the railroad.
Now, my father-in-law was still on the railroad when I came here, like, even though I wasn't married. But after I married my husband, he was still on the railroad. And people during that period of time, the women and the children seemed to understand, just like my father being in the Navy. The women and the children understood the fact that the father had to go out to work. Mm-hmm. And even though I'm sure they missed him and things probably would have been better, it would seem just to be natural that the woman at the time would stay home and take care of the home and the family, and the father would go out to work, and they seemed to handle it. It didn't seem to cause a big problem.
I see. How important is railroad to the black community now?
I don't think it's as important, because there's not that many black brakemen left, and most of the black brakemen that employed blacks from here, and I'm saying blacks, say, that are approximately my age, and I'm saying in the 35 to 40 range, or 45-year-old range, they've gone to Houston, or they've gone to, a place right outside of Houston. I can't think of, it's where the Dow Chemical plant is, all up in that way.
Oh, they've transferred.
Right. I don't think there's a young black. And when I say young, I'm still talking about 35 years to in the 45 range. I don't think it's a young black man, except maybe Philip Wilson and one or two others that still work here. So I don't think the railroad plays a big part in the black community anymore.
Was there, what type of sense of community was there among Kingsville blacks? You know what?
Okay, now to me, now this is somebody looking from the outside in, and I guess because I'm a Navy brat, I learned to be very social. People in Kingsville, some of them were very gossipy, but I don't care how hard the situation was or what the situation was, they would help you. They would help you. I don't care what it was. Like I said, they might talk about you, but they would help you. Not so much anymore in the 80s, but when I first came here in the 60s, man, I'm telling you, there was a problem. You had help from just about everybody. Not everybody was gossipy, though. Don't let me get you wrong.
Okay. Could you tell us how, you know, geographically, what defined the black community here in...
The west side from Lodge Street north to Maple Circle, the project south, and from the railroad west to Armstrong, the railroad east to Armstrong west. That was the confinement of the black community.
And, what type of relationships existed between blacks and whites in Kingsville?
It was like, to me, okay, we went to school with them. Okay, when I first came to Kingsville in 1960, you couldn't go to the white school until you were in the eighth grade. Okay, that changed eventually, but it was like you know them, you go to school with them. When you're out of school, you may see them and speak. But literally, other than working for them, to me, there was no relationship.
So you didn't hang out with them or anything after school?
No, you didn't. Now, a few people played baseball. You know, like some of the guys played baseball with them. And when I first came to Kingsville, most sports were male-oriented. You know, now you could play football with them or baseball with them and stuff like that. But it was not a lot of socialization, no.
How about with the Hispanics?
When I first came to Kingsville, they were a little more sociable in school because there was a bond of ethnicity there. But there, it really, I mean, it was some people that came over, you know, it was more socialization between the Mexican American and the black than the white and the black, but it still wasn't a lot. I don't think it was from prejudice, though. It just wasn't a lot.
Did they live within this community here, the black community?
No. There was maybe one Mexican it was a Mexican lady named Mama Rosa, but she had a daughter that was, she was Mexican-American, and the daughter's father was black. But Mama Rosa is about the only Mexican woman that I remember ever living here. Now, it was an old Mexican man named Black Hat, and Modesto, they used to come over and they used to clean yards anywhere in the city. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they clean yards over here. But that was about the biggest Mexican-American, thing as far as living in this area.
Okay. What type of relationships was it between blacks and people from the Navy, men from the Navy?
There was I'm going to say the young men now, some of them older than I, some of them, they didn't like the men from the Navy because the guys in the city figured that the men in the Navy, I'm talking mostly single here, were messing with the girls. Okay. And it was usually big fights and stuff. And unless the guys were married with children and they weren't running around. Now, the ones married with children seemed to fit in with the married, you know, citizens, and they seem to get along well because my father and mother and I, we never had a big problem, but we mostly associated with Navy people. They did. Now, I associated with everybody, and, you know, as far as my age goes, but my parents still had city friends as well as you know, black city people friends as well as Navy people, but you're still mostly associated with the Navy, and the city people associated with the city people. I think the reason I associated with just about everybody is because of school.
Could you tell me what were some of the events and activities in the black community back then?
Okay, when I first came here, Juneteenth, now there were some people, I cannot remember their names, that used to be here that left, some of them because of retiring and stuff like that. They used to have, King Ranch used to give us, I think it was half a cow, the black community when I say us. And they used to have the biggest barbecue for Juneteenth. And when I'm saying Juneteenth, I said June 19th, the emancipation for black Texans. We used to have the biggest barbecue, and people would get, you know, go to the, it's now called Thompson Park. They used to have, you know, people would just get together and have fun and spend the whole day there. It was just seemed to be understood that this was going to be part of the celebration of Juneteenth. Now we're trying to get back to that. We let it go for a time there, but now we're trying to get back to that. But it's still not like it used to be. It's not as nice as that. And I don't have any real fond memories or any real deep memories of that because it didn't last too long after I came here.
That was the only other town the community got together like that.
You had, you know, church is a major community thing, and our churches here in our community, we don't seem to have any problems as far as denominations go. Mm-hmm. The Methodists invite the Holiness invite the Baptists. You know, we all get together at at their special occasions. But other than weddings and stuff like that, I don't remember any, you know, big social gatherings, no.
Okay, were there any events in the black community which involved whites or Hispanics that you can think of?
No, not unless...
Like softball tournament or something like that.
Okay, not until recently. And I say recently, and I'm talking about in the late 70s and early 80s. My sister-in-law used to work for the city manager and at City Hall, and she was one of the sponsors for the NAACP Youth Council. And they sponsored a softball tournament and the police station, the base, some members of the Clayburgh Bank, including Perry Finger. They sponsored a basketball tournament, stuff like that. But that, like I said, this was late 70s, early 80s. I haven't seen anything before since then that I know of.
What institutions in the black community served as focal points for, you know, black culture and
okay, like I say, the church is the main one. At one point, and this was only from hearsay, I never went to Douglas School, because when I came here, I was in eighth grade. But at one point, the black school, Douglas was a segregated school when I first came here, even though it changed. They taught black history, black music, as well as other kind. Mm-hmm. And I guess you could say the Eastern Star and the Masons. But I didn't know that at the time because I was a lot younger. But I still say the church is the biggest deal in the school.
let me go. You say you came here when you was 13. Could you give us an idea of what it was like growing up in Kingsville?
Well, to me, at 13, people socialized more than they do today. It seems like people were willing to get out, and I don't know whether it was because TV wasn't a great big thing or what, but people just seemed to get along and socialize, and I don't know. We didn't have very many dances down here, but the few we had, we enjoyed and stuff like that. But a kid, oh, I know what we used to get out and play softball on Sundays if it was like in the springtime or the summer, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And we used to really have a good time because sometimes down here at the softball deal right here at Douglas School, we used to have cars lined up, you know, just something to do. People could get together easy. All you had to do was see a group of people somewhere, and everybody would go just to, you know, enjoy themselves.
Okay, when you were young, like when you first got here, what did you do for entertainment? What did children do for entertainment?
Well, like I say, some of the guys play football, girls and guys play basketball. But like I said, wasn't much entertainment. When I first came here, other than that barbecue I was talking about and things at the park, children had a hard time having certain dances. You had to have certain people gave dances and stuff, you know, and they had what they call heaven and hell parties and stuff. But that was about it.
Other than railroad, what other types of employment did blacks have?
Railroad, usually, a lot of the women were maids. I don't really remember a lot of other employment, to tell you the truth. If you weren't in the Navy or you didn't work for the railroad or stuff like that, most people had, you know, a lot of the other people, if they went, they were just service people or railroad people. I don't actually remember a lot of other employment.
Okay. Could you tell me, like, what families dominated in the black community?
Okay, now when I first came here, the Campbells did, Mr. and Mrs. Campbell, because they owned the store on 2nd Street.
Okay.
Now the store I don't remember when the store closed, but it was a focal point. The Jeffersons, because Mr. Jefferson used to be my father-in-law. He used to be the president of the colored trainmen of America. That's what they called him at the time. They used to come to him for a lot of whatever kind of conversations they'd have, whether legal or otherwise. Let me think. I'm sure there were a few others, but those are the two that I remember most. Okay, the Hodges, but the Hodges, because there was quite a few of them, and also they were pretty big in our church. That's why I'm saying that I belong to St. Paul AME Church.
Were there any like family feuds or any types of feuds in the black community?
No, like I said, you get a few people that had a lot of conversation going, but it was nothing that made anybody feud. Nobody wanted to hurt anybody, not, you know, physically or anything like that.
Have there been any major issues that affected the community or blacks that took special interest in?
I think it's always been a problem of, okay, education at the time because of segregation, but that was pretty well changed. But really, segregation in general and the lack of jobs, you know, other than the railroad and stuff like that, and not getting proper recognition as far as getting streets fixed and just forgetting us on the west side altogether, really.
Okay. Yeah. Where do most young people go when they finish their education, like when they graduate high school or whatever?
Okay, now or at the time?
At the time.
When I was younger?
Yeah.
When I was younger, most of the guys went into the service. Most of the girls were married. Very few of the people I grew up with are still in Kingsville. Yeah. Yeah, they all, because there was just nothing here for them. You know, a few of them went to A&I and taught school, you know. But most of the people I grew up with, all the young men that, like I say, that went into the railroad, most of them, except maybe one or two, they're not here. Some of them went into the service, but the fact that the opportunities are so limited for blacks, very few stayed here.
What about today?
It's still the same way, and it's sad because even our children can't get jobs in fast food places. It's just, it's, you know, I mean, they go, and I'm not saying that everybody goes, but the ones that do go, they constantly go, they fill out applications, etc., and they're still not hired. And most of this is pretty, it's, you know, it depresses them, and they tend to go to college, you know, they intend to, but most of them, their ideas are not to stay here. You know, they don't want to stay here because they don't see any opportunities. I've got a daughter graduating in August, and the opportunities are so limited here, I don't see her coming back because there's nothing much she can do. And she's got, you know, good grade point average and everything. It's just sad.
Who more or less could you say have been like the heroes here in Kingsville? Like, who've made it good in Kingsville?
You don't want me to get you mean from what time to what time?
I need
to. Oh, okay. I'm saying this without prejudice. My son is one, James Jefferson III, because now from what they have told me, that they're real excited about him because he seems to have made it. He said he was going to do it, and he went to college, and then he has played pro ball, and people seem to like this. And he still has plans, and they like that. He seems to be trying to do what he says he's going to do. Okay. Okay. Kevin Wickham. Kevin Wickham has gone to high school. He's graduated from college. He's a member of Kappa Alpha Psi. He's very service, community service oriented. He works at Celanese. You know, he's a, like I say, he attended A&I already, didn't I? Mm-hmm. Okay, he's another one. And I'm trying to think about people that came from the area. His wife is very good too, but she came from Corpus. She didn't come from Kingsville. And I don't know about anybody else, but I'm proud of Kevin because I think, you know, he didn't let things bother him. He kept going.
What about in your day, back in the 60s, 70s?
I didn't have any heroes here, so I really don't know. And I never heard anybody talk about anybody else being heroes here at that time. So I don't really. Oh, I take that back. Preacher Pilot played, and I knew Preacher Pilot, not when he was here. I met him after he had gone. But Preacher Pilot played, I'm not sure whether he played pro ball, but he played semi-pro ball. And he was a football player at King High. I don't know if he ever, I think he went to college elsewhere, though. Because I think that was before they started integrating A&I, I'm not sure. But he went to college elsewhere, and I know he played semi-pro ball for the Norfolk Neptunes in Norfolk, Virginia at one time. And he was pretty big, you know, people were really impressed. Oh, and one of the Watson boys played in the Pittsburgh Pirates baseball camp. Now, they were pretty impressed with, I'm not sure which Watson it is, but it's the James Mr. and Mrs. James Watson that live on West Raglan. And, oh, they were also another prominent family. I forgot to tell you about them, the Watson family. It's James Watson, though, because we have two Watsons.
Is it hard for blacks who move into the community to become a part of the community? Like,
no, I don't think so. Literally, we're pretty a friendly community. All you have to do is be friendly back.
Has the community been stable over the years?
I think it's gone down myself. It was a better community at one time.
Yeah. Do they have their own cemetery or burial spots?
No, it's all integrated. We all use Chamberlain or the other cemetery. I don't know the name of that one, but it's all integrated. I mean, the area at one point, all blacks were buried in one spot. spot in Chamberlain, but now it's, I don't think so anymore.
What about politics and black leadership in Kingsville?
Okay, I think we have very good, now I'm not sure if the, Mr. Horn was very good when I was younger, Mr. Woody Horn, but now as of today, Mr. Woody Horn is, but he's been kind of sick, so I think he's trying to give some of his activities up. Reverend Simon, Reverend R.R. Simon, he is pretty good, but he's only recently moved in our community about a year or two ago. Dr. Benny Green, Dr. Helen Hahn, she tries to get around and do the best she can. She has, she's been ill once, but she, for a woman that's been ill, she's really tough. Kay Loftus is not really politically involved, but she has been pretty good as far as trying to help people in our city, and she, because she works from the welfare department, so she kind of gets around.
Okay.
Loftus, L-O-F-T-I-S. I tell you right now, that's the only people I can think of, and these people were, these people work pretty hard, but they don't, it's hard to get backing. That's their main problem. A lot of people kind of, I guess when you've been told no so long or whatever, you kind of think, well, I'm going to do this and I got this, and they're not going to listen. But they don't understand is you keep having to fight. And I think a lot of people are changing their attitude, and they're doing better, but still hard.
How did Mr. Horn become a leader?
I think Mr. Horn took it upon himself. He just saw that it was something that was necessary, and he went out and he did it.
Did he go through the churches, or he just...
He went down to the city, and I'm not even sure why. I don't know what was the first issue that made him decide that he wanted to go out and do. But he did it, and I'm sure he went to the churches for backup, you know, as far as the people are concerned. But I don't think anybody, you know, said, we want you to get out and do this. I think that he just did it because he saw something that needed to be done, and he decided to do it.
Okay, we have Reverend Simon as the only preacher here. Is he the only pastor or preacher here who's tried to do anything political for the black community, like Reverend Jackson? Or?
Okay, now Reverend Jackson is very good, but now if Reverend Simon asks Reverend Jackson to do anything, he is always available. Very nice person, but Reverend Simon seems to be the one that's into political things. He's a leader, not only in the church, but he's a political leader. And I think that's not only because he used to be a high school principal at once, but he's been to quite a few places, and every place he's been in, he's always tried to help the community.
And he's the pastor of your church?
Yes.
St. Paul?
AME Church. Yeah. Oh, yes. I didn't even think about that. He'd be glad to talk to you. Even like I said, he's just been here about 2 years, but he's been good.
He just came in.
And just go, and yeah, and he just went right into stuff.
What type of relationship did blacks have with law enforcement agencies like police, sheriff, and so forth?
At one time, there was really no relationship at all. I mean, it was like we took care of our own. And they didn't bother us unless there was something big. And no, and at the time, nobody really cared for police officers, but it wasn't voiced. I mean, it was just something most people didn't even talk about. And I don't even remember at growing up in Kingsville, say from 13, and even though I left for a couple of years and came back, I don't remember seeing a lot of police cars in our area.
That's what I was going to say, because my years here in Kingsville, I can count the times on one hand that I've seen a patrol car patrolling
right.
around.
Well, you see them more recently because we've had a little rash of burglaries and stuff like that. But, and like I say, when I say recently, I'm saying in the last 6 months or so. Is that uncomfortable?
No, I'm just going to turn it off.
But, like I say, we never did see, and we literally took care of our own unless it was just something that was really bad. Now, before I came here, I don't know. I really don't know. Matter of fact, my husband was the first black police officer in Kingsville on regular patrol. And I was the first black woman police officer at the Kingsville Police Department. But, and I'm saying the first black police officer on regular patrol because if there was another one, I don't know anything about him. And so James was the first black one on regular patrol.
Your husband?
Mm-hmm. James Jefferson II.
I didn't know he was a police officer. Mm-hmm. He still one now?
Oh, no, no, no. He stayed down there for 7 years and he left after that. He works for Exxon. Let's see, that was him. I think he worked for them in 1968 or 69. I'm not sure.
You got a job at campus?
No, my first one was downtown and now it's on campus. I was a police officer at Kingsville Police Department. And what? Oh my goodness, I was 24 years old. You can do the subtracting. I'll be 41 this year. So. Matter of fact, it's Saturday.
Oh, husband and wife.
But not at the same time. He was gone before I went down there.
So that blacks are just not interested in becoming a police officer? Yet.
No, there have been several since then. No. But not one right behind the other. Matter of fact, Ezra Nelson was a police officer, a city police officer, and he was also the sheriff's department just until recently. We had two. One's wife was in the Navy. And this was in the early 80s, I think. And we had one, I don't know what, I know his name was Smiley. That's all I know. And he used to be an A&I student, and he quit and went down there. But they didn't stay very long. But as far as I know, there's been one, two, three, four, about five or six blacks in the city police department. But they have a big turnover, so you can't say that that's racial, I don't think.
What, you know, black businesses and entrepreneurship, what type of businesses did blacks have in Kingsville?
Okay, when I first came here, Mr. Charles Andrews, okay, I'm sorry, Mr. Charles Andrews was also a very prominent family because he had a cleaners here, okay. He had a barbershop here, and his wife was one of the teachers also. He was very prominent, he was considered the entrepreneur of this section of town also. And I don't know. They said he was into politics, but I don't know anything about it because I've never heard of anything. And after that, James Mosley, he started his own barbershop, King's Barbershop, and Richard Munding has a barbershop. He used to be in there with a Mr. Newton. And matter of fact, before Ms. Helen Hodge went back to school, she had a beauty shop here. And Mrs. Myrtle Morris also had a beauty shop. But Mr. Charles Andrews, I would call what they call the entrepreneurs. But it was mostly beauty shops and barbershops. And like I said, Mr. Andrews had the barbershop and the cleaner, so, you know, he was, and Mr. and Mrs. Campbell had the grocery store. Mm-hmm. And there was another small grocery store here owned by Mr. and Mrs. Brooks on 2nd Street on this end, Mr. and Mrs. Brooks. I don't remember the first names, but I know that they had a small grocery store here. But to tell you the truth, that was it. I don't remember there being any other. You know, now Mr. Mosley is not on nowadays. Mr. Mosley not only has a barbershop, he's into real estate.
Oh,
yeah. His wife is also a teacher.
What attitudes do blacks have towards supporting these businesses owned by blacks?
Oh, 100%.
So they gave them mostly all their business.
They gave them all, just as far as I know, they gave them all, even though, like, say, that Andrew's Cleaners and Barbershop also, you know, had businesses, white business, some Mexican-American business, but I remember mostly white businesses, people coming in. But, oh, yeah, the blacks gave him 100%.
Does his cleaner still exist?
No. He passed away. Matter of fact, the cleaners, he was doing something and got electrocuted in the cleaners.
Mm.
No. His wife closed all of it down because she's not well.
Did they employ just mostly blacks in their businesses?
Mr. Andrews employed, in his barbershop, they were all black. Including himself. In his cleaners, there were blacks and Mexican Americans. And in the store, the stores were all black employees. The beauty shops, all black employees.
How has this entrepreneurship in the black community changed over the years?
There is none anymore.
Just the joints.
The beer joints. I'm sorry, I forgot about those, but there's only one. There's only one left out of three. And some of the food place we had, they had a rest of, you know, small hamburger joints every now and then. But out of the food places and the joints, the clubs, or whatever you want to call them, day and night's the only one still left. And it's run by a Mexican-American wife and black husband in an interracial marriage situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's only one left.
The black family in Kingsville, what has been the most typical family structure?
In Kingsville, we've been pretty lucky with the father, the mother, and the children. I mean, there's a divorce, you know, they divorce well, you know, like anybody else, but it's pretty good around here as far as having a full structure, you know, the father, mother, and the children.
Okay, what were the attitudes toward interracial dating and marriages?
There was none until just recently. Absolutely none. And the ones that did exist, it was like Mr. and Mrs. Freeland, the ones that own the Day and Night now. But they lived in, I guess they lived in the Mexican-American neighborhood because I didn't see them until I had graduated from high school. And I never even asked anybody about them. They didn't bother me. But I don't remember any interracial anything growing up. The only time I remember anything going on interracial was in the late 70s, and that was at ANI's campus, and it was still spotty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now some people like it and some people don't. In other words, I won't say like it. Some people don't mind. You know, but it's usually the younger people that's doing it. You know, when I say younger people, I say anybody from 25 down.
What about, what caused the greatest stress on a black family?
I guess the lack of opportunities. You know, it's just, that can be a downfall to anybody. To me, as well as, you know, even though we get along with the white people in our city, it's still an attitude of, just as long as you stay where you belong, we're fine. You know, And that's not everybody. Let me clarify that.
Are you aware of any folk traditions among Kingsville blacks as far as like folk medicine and the folk foods, arts and crafts?
Okay. Now, as far as food goes, not just in Kingsville, but blacks in general, they really do like greens. And when I say greens, I mean collard greens, turnip greens, stuff like that. And they put ham hocks or salt pork in it just like years ago. They still like black-eyed peas and rice, cornbread. But they eat just about everything else everybody eats, other than that's one of the things that they still like. And as far as any other cultures and stuff, you know, they like, you know, we all like our music. We like all music now, but it's still black music that we, you know, you prefer sometimes. And the spiritual is the main song that everybody likes, young and old. And But most black people in this area, we've got a few wonderful artists. Now, I don't know about any special kind of art, but we've got a few wonderful artists. And as far as we've got musicians as artists, we've got painters and sketchers as artists, we've got singers. You know, just about anything like anyone else, but I don't know any special culture that I could name. We have talents like football and baseball here and stuff, but I can't just give you, you know, I'm not that well acquainted with some of the things that may have happened years ago that still goes on here.
When you first got here, how did blacks take care of the sick? Like,
People didn't go to nursing homes, no. When you had old people, they went to, you know, somebody in the family, and everybody goes to take care of them. You know, like the family that they live with took care of them. But for some reason, black people seem to stay well for a long time. I don't know, I hope this is not a prejudiced comment, but they seem to stay well. They don't seem to get sick, and I mean sick and down, until they're real old. Some of them late 80s, 90s, you know. And then it's like they call her Aunt Dean. She's an Adams. Mrs. Adams, she's out of the nursing home now, but most of her family is either dead or they've moved away. I don't think there's any really young people here. But she is, except for not having a real good memory about today. Now, she can remember old things and tell you stuff right on the money. But she's over 100 years old, and she still can get around, unless just recently she can't walk. But, you know, she's still in very good shape. You know, you can never tell this woman was over 100 years old. You know, you can tell she's old, but not that old. But the people took care of their own, in other words.
So, to what extent did they rely on doctors and hospitals and clinics?
Everyone went to doctors in the city. They went to the hospital. But for a cold, very seldom when I first came here. Now, as I've been here, they go. But most people had their own medicines. You go to the store and you buy Vicks and you rub the chest or mentholatum. My mother-in-law used to give us some kind of cold tar on sugar that used to open up your chest. My grandmother did that herself, and this, like I say, this is kind of universal, not just in the city, but one of the things in the city. They had all kind of salves and things that they used to, you know, use, and they'd take a teapot and let that steam come up and open up your nose and stuff after they rub you down and stuff like that. I mean, very seldom anybody took a child to a doctor for a cold. You know, and the children seem healthier to me.
Did the men working on the railroad, did they have insurance through the railroad?
Oh, yes. Very good insurance from what I understand.
Did the families benefit from that insurance?
Mm-hmm. They benefited from the insurance. They also, you know, rode the railroad free anywhere they wanted to go.
Could you tell me some of the home remedies? You said about colds. What about headaches, stomach aches, nosebleeds, and stuff like that?
Okay, nosebleeds was ice. You always put ice on that nose and use it, unless it was just profusely bleeding. That's the only time you went to the doctor or the hospital. I mean, it had to be something they just could not stop. But they put ice on it. And you held your head back. And after you put the ice on a while, you would take your fingers and pinch the bridge of your nose back until it just stopped completely. Okay, headaches, you just took aspirin. Let's see. If you had a stomach ache, you're nauseated. Some people would give you the white water off of rice because they said that that is chalky, and that would stop you. Or they would give you cheese grits because cheese binds. Or they would give you crackers and 7-Up. Saltine crackers and 7-Up, but they beat the fizz out of the 7-Up or Coke. What else? If you had a backache, they take a hot water bottle and maybe rub some. Now, they did believe in Bengay. Rub Bengay and put that hot water bottle on them. Bad knees, you got that Bengay and a heating pad or a hot water bottle. They believed in wrapping you up good if it was, you know, if you had a cold, or try to get sweat that cold out of you. They had an old remedy of,
Did y'all rely on any Mexican American folk medicines?
I don't know a whole lot about Mexican-American folk medicine, but I tell you, aloe is something that I forgot about. That aloe is another, it's an aloe plant. You can break, people used to grow it in the yard, and it has a slimy sap to it, and they used to rub it on scars and sores. And now, from what somebody told me, that was a Mexican-American folk remedy, but I don't know if, you know, I don't know if it was or not. That's the only one I know about.
Okay. Was there any type of domestic arts women made, like quilts, embroidery?
Oh, yes, embroidery, beautiful quilts. Matter of fact, women used to buy plain, and this is not just Kingsville either, this is kind of universal black, but I'm telling you about Kingsville now. They used to buy plain white pillow cases for your pillow, and they used to buy the embroidery stamp. And they would iron it on, and then they would embroider it and put lace around the bottom, sometimes crochet lace around the bottoms and stuff. They would be the prettiest pillows and pillowcases. They would crochet bedspreads. They would quilt, and they would make some of the most beautiful designs I've ever seen. And some of the designs, you really don't have patterns for them because it was like out of their heads. And I don't think... Some of the women my age, and I'm saying 40, they try to quilt, but they just don't come up with the quilts like grandma made. Those are the prettiest quilts I've ever seen.
Well, did men practice any kind of crafts, like wearing leather crafts or ironworks or anything like that?
I don't know. When I came to Kingsville, no. Not that I know of.
Were there any kind of special rites of passages, like, were there any special events when someone was born or married or when they died?
Oh, I don't know of anything special that you don't know about today. It's just except that almost when somebody was born, everybody acknowledged it. When someone died, almost everybody acknowledged that. When someone got married, almost everybody in this area was invited. It's close, so it's kind of hard to leave somebody out. Even if you're not real friendly with them, you're still acquainted well enough. And this wasn't just for a gift. This was because we all live in the area and we know one another. And it's just kind of hard to have something and not invite just about everybody. But I don't know about any special... You know, like, say, like, a long time ago, black people had certain rituals. I don't know about anything like that.
Okay. What about folk beliefs? Like, ghosts, what have you.
I don't know anything about, let's see, my mother-in-law, and I'm saying my mother-in-law because my mother-in-law and my father-in-law were my grandparents' age, okay? My father-in-law was born in 1900, my mother-in-law was born in 1905. Okay, they used to say, like when your front door, say it was a warm, still day, and if your front door blew open and it was a gust of wind coming through, that was a soul that had died that was either related to you or that had lived in that house, and they were just coming to visit, you know. And I heard them say that a lot. Her mother, I didn't know my mother-in-law's mother, but the door flew open one day and she just started talking to her mother. She said, "Come here, mother." She said, "That's my mother." And it was not especially cold wind or anything. It was just a wind. And when you had those little, I call them little tornadoes, you know, like when the dust just blows up and looks like a little teeny tornado on the ground, she said, "That's the devil doing his work." And, oh, when it rained and it was thunder and lightning, that was God's work. And you really, when I was young even, you were supposed to be quiet while God was doing his work. Now, that changed. You know, people got so thunder and lightning, just did what you had to do. But that was God's work. And you had respect for that.
Let's see.
Something you didn't know.
Was there any folk narratives, like jokes, legends, or something?
Oh, yes, and I couldn't begin to tell you, and I wish I knew some of them, but oh, man, the men used to get on the corner, or not necessarily on the corner, but men used to gather, and they had, I wish I had a tape. My brother-in-law has a tape. And these are older men, and they would tell jokes, and they had narratives and stuff about the old people and things that happened that I couldn't do justice to, so. But yes, they were great ones.
Who has this tape?
My brother-in-law, he lives in California. Oh. I could try to get it, but I don't know if he'll part with it. He might make you a tape to, he might send me a tape of it, because he keeps everything. And I don't, when my mother-in-law died, he came down at one of the old break with Mr. Jenkins. All of these things aren't true, we know. But they're joke, you know, like they used to get together and tell jokes, and we used to call it joking and lying, you know. Sometimes it's truth and jokes to it, you know, and it's truth and lies, but most of the time you end up laughing or it was just fun, you know. And I don't know, just, I wish I could tell you something, but I really don't, I couldn't. His
hearing. So, do you think you can ask him to send a copy of that tape?
I'll ask. I will ask, yes.
That'd be great. I'd like to have it myself,
now
too.
Now that's history. I'm telling you, because those old men, man, they could get that. And he wanted more, but he just couldn't get it because of the period of time he had to stay. But, man, they could tell you some things that it's just what they call shucking and jiving, okay? Yeah. It was just a whole lot of fun.
Mr. Horn would probably do some of that for me.
I don't know. Mr. Horn was a very serious man. I've never seen Mr. Horn on the shucking and jiving end, but that doesn't mean he can't. It's just that I've never seen it. You know, and, of course, men did not shuck and jive when a bunch of women were around like they do when it's a bunch of men around, you know. So,
can you tell if you're in the black community by looking at people's houses and yards and stuff?
When I was young, I don't think so. And nowadays, I don't think so, because you've got more communities that don't look so hot either. And then you got houses here that are nice. You got houses here that aren't so nice. You got yards here that are nice. You got yards that aren't so nice. And I've gone to other areas of town and seen the same thing. Except, our houses aren't as close together as some of the newer neighborhoods. You know, it looks, you know, they have smaller yards, etc. And our houses aren't that close together. Now that, to me, you can tell. But, and it's not a totally black neighborhood anymore, because we have quite a few Mexican-Americans in our neighborhood now. and a few blacks lived other places, but
this interview with Mr. Woody Horn Jr. on February 14th, 1989. Mr. Horn, I'd like to know when and where you were born and your parents also.
Well, I was born in Denison, Texas, March 8th, 1914. Parents born. One of them was born in Sherman, Texas. My daddy was born in Elmo, Texas. Now, what year I forgot.
Okay. And can you recall when your grandparents was born and where they lived?
Or where they were born? No, I don't. One of my grandmothers on my daddy's side was in Elmo, Texas. The other grandmother was in Sherman, Texas.
Let's see. Could you tell me how did you end up in Kingsville? Why did your family come to Kingsville?
Why?
Yes.
Mostly looking for a good paying job.
Let's see.
And I finally came to Kingsville because they had railroad here with Negro brakes.
Did you get a job? Did you get a job?
Yes. Went to work. Came here in January. I believe it was the 2nd or 3rd of January in 45. And I went to work a week after I was here as a student brakeman. In those days, they didn't call them students, they called them roofs. I was rude for 2 weeks, then I went to break. I had a oral book. We had to study, learn all about signals, traffic lights, what few we had, learn the road, switches, towns that we were running through that we squished, I had to learn that. Then, after I learned that real well, we had Negro phones. When I come here, you only had one white phone, a yard phone. That's what it was. And then I worked up to a yard. First job I worked was in Brownsville, Texas, on the 8 a.m. yard job that went to Mexico once a day, every day, except Sundays.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Could you tell me what type of role the railroad played in the development of the black community here in Kingsville?
Well, that's mostly all jobs that blacks had in Kingsville. Railroad shops and the shop on the road, transportation department in the shop. Practically all the Negroes worked there. And this is the reason why the railroad made a big impact upon the black communities, because that's how we made our living at that particular time. It wasn't any other job unless it was a dishwashing job or a cook or something like that. Mostly working in some
How well were y'all paid working for the railroad?
Well, we was paid pretty well at that, in that particular time, because the wages was about one of the highest they had around here.
Yes.
Even the school teachers didn't make the kind of money that we made on the railroad.
How did the depression affect any y'all worked right through the depression, right? It didn't affect the railroad workers.
I came here in 1945, and the depression was over.
Okay.
The depression was back in the 1930s.
Okay.
1929-1930.
Okay, how did working for the railroad affect your family? Did you have a family when you started working with the railroad?
Yes, I had a wife.
Did it affect y'all any? Which way did it affect you anyway?
Didn't affect us, no. A good way, because that's where we started to accumulate things.
Okay, why was the colored trainmen of America organized?
Why was it organized? The colored trainmen of America was organized to protect the black brakemen. And foremen, different categories.
Yeah, I wasn't allowed in. Were there a union for the white railroad workers?
Oh, yes.
And blacks weren't allowed in that union?
Wasn't allowed to join the white union.
Oh, I see.
So that's the reason why they formed a union of their own. Which at that time was the only black union in the United States owned and operated by black men.
Did any of you or your colleagues, any of you try to get into the white union?
Yes, they tried, but they were turned down. I know some older than I was tried, and they turned you down.
Okay. What other types of, were you able to explain that to me?
What
are the types of employment there were in Gainesville, in the community, other than railroad? It was domestic help.
Well, domestic work, like I first did.
Yes.
If that's the only railroad, some had some working on gangs, they had some working on sections. That was the people that maintained the track.
Can you recall what the schools were like when you first got here?
Well, they were segregated. You had, just before I came here, they had to go to, after you finished, I think the 8th or 9th grade, I'm not quite sure.
Yes.
But you could finish high school, you had to go to San Antonio. Later on, went to Corpus. Eventually, got to high school here.
Let's see. Could you tell me, like, what geographically designed the black community when you first got here?
Geographical design.
The bottom.
This side of, you know what, railroad track?
Yes.
Well, the west side of the railroad track over here was for blacks. The east side was for white. The northeast side. That's
What type of relationships existed with the whites in Kingsville?
Well, as far as I can recall, with the people in Kingsville, we got along real well. We wasn't too bad. We got along real well. Yeah. And I'm trying to think what year it was when we came into integrated. And now that integrated in 1964, 54, 64, 54, I believe. They had after Brown versus the University of Kansas, when that decision was handed down. And that's when we really started to moving forward. We had over that time. And that's the time that the first thing they integrated here was teachers. They brought in the teachers and integrated those people. Then in the next year or two, they integrated the whole school for the children that could go different schools. Okay. We never had any trouble, and that was that procedure in integrating. We didn't have any fights and riots and all that stuff. That was heard of. It just was a smooth transition.
And how about with the Hispanics?
Same thing.
Same thing. Mm-hmm. What type of relationships existed with blacks who were associated with the Navy?
Well, I don't know too much about the Navy. I wasn't in the Navy, but we never had any trouble that I knew of out on the base until, I'm trying to think what year this was, when we had a black Navy person that they claimed he tried to start a race riot. We interceded on the Navy base. We interceded in that case. He came out. And they couldn't really pin him down to that because in the investigation and everything, we found out that he didn't start it. Some white started. I don't know what white was. Started out on the base at the flu about that. He got a discharge. He discharged him after he came clear. And then when they discharged him, he came right on a job at the railroad. And I think he's still working for the railroad on this date. He was in the last couple of months. I don't know what's happening out there now.
What type of relationships existed with blacks in other communities in Gainesville? No, like.
They got along all right for us. Because I used to go out to the base then and then. Of course, I never was a party man. I never was a beer joint fella.
Yes.
Go around in those kind of places. I went, but most of the time I was a sightseer. I'd go by myself. But I never seen them get unruly. I never seen them get unruly. Not a different race. we didn't mix that much until we got out to the Navy. And over here, now they had a club over here, what they used to call a USO down here, and they would come out there, the Navy personnel. So I never heard of anybody getting hurt or anything, or fighting.
What type of events were held here in the black community in Kingsville?
Events
or activities and/or activities.
Well, yes. Back there, they did. I know once a year they had a picnic, and that would be somewhere around the 19th of June. Then, just before I came here, they had another club that the railroad sponsored, which was a baseball team, which is still Barney, he's passed and gone, was one of the chief boosters of that time. And the railroad would give them passes to carry the team wherever they wanted to go. They were very nice.
Were there any events or activities that a significant number of whites or Hispanics were involved in here in the black community?
Well, back then in those days?
Yes.
No, I don't think it was too many. Nothing but playing baseball. I think they played baseball against the blacks and against the Spanish. Yeah.
Well, what institutions in the black community served as the focal points?
Well, the main focal point when I came here was church. The church. Because that's where most everything would happen at the church. Sometimes they would have picnics, you know, out on the parks and things like that. But the most folks that was kind of Christ-like even went to church. Different churches here, different denominations. Back there. Yes. But other than that, I don't recall too many other things.
How were blacks portrayed in local newspapers?
Well, it wasn't too much of that in the newspaper yet it came about the blacks. Until 1975 or 76. That's when that most of any write-up that you would care of, the newspaper would run it, would print it, the news. It's not one, the NAACP here, well, just before I came down here, they had a tough time. Well, I was here, well, I belonged to it, but I wasn't working actively, but I was a member. Sometimes we have kind of trouble in getting them to print what we wanted to print. You know, they would edit a lot of it out and print it like they see it fit. But we've got all that straightened out. Because they wasn't going to do it. I remember one time they didn't do it and we sent it to the Corpus paper and they did it. Well, called me in and asked me why did I send the news to the Corpus paper. And I just told them flat out, you had too much out of it. You're taking all the meaning out of it. Now the hardest thing we've had down here since I've been here is trying to get streets paved, drainage, and all that. Now we had to fight and fuss with the city they found the city guilty. And they sent the finding to the city. And they didn't want to do it, but they had to do it because they were getting federal money. I don't know, they might have thought we didn't know that, but we knew all of that too. And right now, they have promised us things out in this area when they're running for office.
Yes.
When they get in there and you jump about it, they still say they're going to do it, but when they go out of office, it's not done. They'll tell you that. Now, that's right now. The city commissions that we have right now, they promised. They said they were going to do it. Used to be a dog farm right over there. We spoke and got that moved out of that indirect fence, like around it. The fence that the city owned that property, they had a dog farm there. We fought to get the dog farm moved. We got it moved. And we asked them for the property. You know, we moved the dog farm. But instead, when they started digging the drainage, you know, putting the drainage down in here, well, they hauled all the dirt over. You can look at the pictures over there now. And every one we have elected have came out here and had a forum and stated they would clean it up. It haven't been cleaned up yet. You know, our trouble is, you change commissioners, you change mayors, and they say they're going to do this before they get in there. Their intentions might be good. I don't know. I can't say. But all I can say, they didn't do it. And haven't did it as yet. Yes, we fought with the city quite a bit. Quite a bit.
What was y'all's intentions with the land if they had they granted y'all?
The money they granted, or the federal government grant the city the money. You know, they used to get federal grants.
Yes.
They didn't have to pay that money back. You see, when when revenue sharing came out, it was originated, set to have low and middle income people like where they live, you know, out in their district. But what happened, revenue sharing, the city, they left it. They had flaws in it, the bylaws of it. So they used it to spend, they helped take care of the city equipment and all that, automobile stuff like that. Well, we complained when we filed our complaint. We filed it to revenue sharing and the federal grant HUD.
Yes.
All right. Well, HUD sent people here, right in, I never remember, right in this place where you just gone out. And they found it. And it was so. I was so thankful that God sent rain that day, and they couldn't get out of it. Now, we had been asking for drainage all along. But after they found out that they couldn't get out, I said, how do you expect for us to get out? But we have a job to go to, but still yet we have to get on the job when the man gets fired, and we need to wait. So that's when they went back to Washington. That's when they found the city of Kingville guilty, discriminating against the black people over here. Then we got a little something done. We got the drainage problem done. We got some streets paved with grant money. this street down here on 3rd Street, this end, they closed that 3rd Street up without even notifying any the citizens out in this area. We didn't know it. But they had passed their decision on it. Then when we did find out, we tried to get them to pave it anyhow, over in the asking before we had asked for 3rd Street to be paved. The federal government told them to pave 3rd Street. I don't know whether that doc, all that document stuff is over there, there or not. It's been handled so much. I guess it is over there. What they were supposed to do, they did part of it and said they ran out of money. And that's another thing. I happened to be in the hospital when they bid it on when they voted on that 3rd Street. And they had built up an open ditch there. Boy, we're taller than you. And I'm right now outside of, you know, any kid would go over and got drowned or that, a lot of water. Like sometimes when it do rain sometimes, a lot of water. And so I wrote Hood again, the NAACP, I was president at that time. We wrote Hood again. And somehow or another, about a week or two after I was out of the hospital, one of the city commissioners met me and told me, said, you know what? Says, I don't know where they got the money, but they're going to put their storm drainage in there. I said, well, I wrote Hood about it again. Well, they told them to do it, and they didn't do it. Now, at that time, they could get grants. No more grants now, but in that time, they was could get grants. And so I'd ask Hood to, if they didn't do it, to cease. Just don't let them have any more grants. Even revenue sharing, don't let them have that. I said, because they refused to obey your instructions. So somehow or another, I found out after they got that letter, they got over the city. And the city put this drainage again. That's how hard we had to fight for the little stuff you see on this side of town. It wasn't handy. And all the rest of the streets that was paved here before then, we had to pay. The property owner had to pay for a part of the street and the curbing. That's true. That street right out there you see in front of my house, that 100 foot there, I paid for the curbing. I paid out to the middle of the street. And the other property owner on the other side, they paid for the curbing and back to the middle of the street. But I never could find out what did the city pay. That we paid for the middle of the street. I said, you couldn't have. That's not the way it's down here. But they still claim that they made us pay for the whole thing. If we wanted to put a nice street to walk on. Because when I first came here, all of this was just black dirt, man. You had to have boots to get out of here when it rained. Wear boots all day long. Every time you step out your house, you had to have some boots on when it was the rainy season. So we did want some streets down in here. And a lot of folk, not only me, paid that money. Quite a few.
Thanks to the railroad, y'all was able to pay it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Did the railroad back y'all up any, or they would stay
out
of
it? No, the railroad didn't have anything. They don't interfere with things like that. City, they call it politics, but the city business, they don't interfere with it. Not unless they're interfering with something on their property. See, they have rotted right away from here. But this is out here. Oh, the railroad, we were working for the railroad, and by us working, we was able to pay Okay. Yeah, we had jobs on the railroad. Well, practically everybody here, down in here, worked for the railroad. Their parents, a lot of them passed a long time. They worked. So the railroad really helped the blacks a lot. Because in 1969, yes, 1969, we were being hired as conductors, but we didn't get that until Uncle Sam stepped in. Pepper George, he's the one came down and here for me. He was one of the government men. He was the one that was the man that you seen was about discriminating. He wanted to make sure that the blacks had a chance after they awarded it to us. And he came down here and helped me for us to see that they were going to treat us just as fair as they did the white man when he was promoted to us. We had got quite a few black conductors here now, and you got quite a few black engineers now. But they couldn't even have no black farmers. We didn't have no black farmers. Farmers was white. It's better. It's a little better. I've seen the time that they would not let you go to that cottage out there when I first came here. You going to N.I.?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you couldn't go to N.I. That's right. You see how many black professors you have out there in any tenure? You see how many you have?
Yes, sir. Just one, Dr. Green.
That's all you have is one. And you can pick up one of those magazines and you're looking there and they'll tell you that they got all of these black professors. They got people out there, students teaching, calling them professors. You and I have. Yeah, we fought the N.I. We've been fighting him quite a while. I remember way back we started fighting.
Are you still president of NAACP?
Right now.
Yes.
But I'm, I am now. But I'm fixing to retire here this month. Yeah. I'm going to retire this month.
Well, other than yourself, before I came here, my other people who I've interviewed have considered you one of the heroes here in Kingsville. Could you tell me who else would probably be considered a hero here in Kingsville in the black community?
Well, I don't know why they consider me a hero. I didn't do no more than no other person was doing. I was doing to help them and myself. But I thank them for it. Maybe because I was the only black that would stand up and fight. I guess the reason why they said it. I fought the school system too. Because when Harris left here, I was in the school board meeting and I was told there won't be another black professor in this town. Not in this school system. But Thompson's, Coach Thompson? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I'm the one that really fought for him. I'm the one that called to him with that job. But I don't call it no big thing. I just wanted a black.
Yes.
As long as it was a black, I didn't care. But since he was up for it, that's who I was harping on. Yes, I've been to the school board meetings by myself. Yes, I've been in other meetings up in the courthouse by myself when they were picking it. Yeah, I've been all up there. A lot of folks out here was afraid of me. I wasn't afraid. Those Spanish people wasn't brown berets. They wasn't fighting me. They was fighting City Hall, and I was fighting City Hall. So why would one of them want to hurt me? Yes, I was here when the city commissioners and then when the leading meeting had to have police escorts to get home. Yes, I was here. I was in that meeting up in the courthouse upstairs. I was the only black guy. I didn't say anything until the last. And I wouldn't have said it then if this Justice Department fella hadn't asked me. So I turned the thing all the way around. And they turned red as beets up there. I had one fella here, I told him, I said, you won't be mayor here no more. And I told one, I said, you won't be on the president board no more for the school system. I said, no, you won't be there no more. I said, me and my God's gonna move you. And that's what we did. We moved you. We moved the mayor. Of course, I wasn't arguing with him, but he wouldn't speak to me, and now he's on the board of directors. But the cop, Cooney, he's on the board of directors. Now, why'd they pick a fellow like that? Know he discriminates against people. Why would the board of directors pick someone like that? See, that's what they want. But they picked him. Yes, I had. When I got the lady off the school board, me and her sister were real tight. She was our state representative. She fell out with me. She said, why did you do that? I said, because she's discriminating against me. I said, when you discriminate against one black, you discriminate against me too. I'm in that bunch. Yeah. That's what I told her. Right. So, everything got along all right. Coach doesn't marry a long time before he spoke. And you know, I think the reason why he started speaking to me and Mr. Mack, L.C. Mack, we were invited to a luncheon with the senator. And we went. And we were talking to the senator. Well, he came up, bursted up at a butt end. And the senator told him, just wait a minute. I'm talking to Mr. Horn here now. Wait a minute. I'll get around to you. You see what I mean?
Yes.
Now, he didn't like that. I know he didn't like it. You know, I'm a fella like this. I don't talk a lot. Because when I talk, I mean what I say. I don't talk a lot. I listen. I notice